Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Think about what can go right when you plan for the future. Talk to a financial broker and start your savings plan today.
Drive Time on RTÉ Radio 1 with Sarah McInerney and Cormac O'Hara.
Berlin has decided whether it will has decided not to allow German-made tanks to be sent to Ukraine. A major meeting of Western allies to arrange support for Ukraine took place in Germany today. But at a news conference afterwards, US Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says Germany has not made a decision yet regarding the tanks. It comes as intense fighting continues in eastern Ukraine around the city of Bakhmut. I'm joined on the line now by Ben Weidman, who's a senior international correspondent with CNN, and he's in eastern Ukraine as we speak. Ben, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
I believe you're in Bakhmut, is that right?
No, actually, we were in Bakhmut today, but we are back in Kramatorsk. But what we saw in Bakhmut is that the shelling is intense, coming from both sides. What we see is that the Russians are trying to encircle the city, the main road connecting Bakhmut to Ukrainian-controlled territory is now cut off because it's under constant Russian fire. So the only way in or out is through back roads. But the Russians have, according to the Russian Defense Ministry, took a strategic village just to the south of Bakhmut. And, of course, they've also taken Soledar to the north. So the vice is tightening very steadily.
You were with the Ukrainian forces, and they're suffering significant losses, Ben.
Yes. Today, for instance, we saw one man who was critically wounded when the Russians opened fire on their armored personnel carrier. The day before yesterday, we were at a spot where frontline casualties are brought to medics just a couple kilometers from the fighting. And there we saw a variety of wounded soldiers being taken away, a dead one as well. And the medics tell us that at times they're simply overwhelmed with the number of casualties that they're having to deal with.
Can I play our audience a little segment from your latest report for CNN? You spoke with Ukrainian soldiers as they came back from the front line. Have a listen to this. This is harrowing stuff.
There were regular troops, says this soldier, and in front of them just meat, convicts in packs, on drugs, without armor, without helmets. For them, life has no value.
That is harrowing stuff. They were fighting the Ukrainian soldiers you spoke with, Ben, the Wagner forces, and did I pick that up correctly? Were the Russian forces using convicts, prisoners, as shields?
Well, basically, they have offered, the Wagner group has offered basically a pardon, an amnesty to any convicts if they volunteer to fight in Ukraine. And what we've seen, and today, in fact, we were speaking in a bunker with one Ukrainian officer who explained that, the Wagner forces, they attack at night, and that the first wave of the attack is usually these untrained ex-convicts, and they have to use all their ammunition just to repel the first wave. And the second wave comes, and these are real forces. These are real professional soldiers who have night vision. They're better trained. They're better equipped. And this sort of illustrates the challenge facing Ukrainian forces who are numerically inferior, to the Russian forces. And the Russian forces, as we've seen time and time again, their tactic, in addition to this human wave tactic, they use their artillery to a massive extent, just obliterating everything in their path. And the Ukrainians, they're doing what they can with what they have, but we hear time and time again, they need more ammunition, they need better equipment, they need better logistical support. And what I've seen, for instance, I was covering this area back in March and April, and it was basically an army driving around in old Soviet-era Lada cars, Now we see them going around in heavy armored personnel carriers. There's a lot of tanks in the area, but it still doesn't seem to be successfully blunting the Russian offensive in this part of the country.
Which is why, I suppose, President Zelensky, looking at the Western allies meeting at the military base in Ramstein in Germany, he said, "I don't want your thank yous or your platitudes," and I'm paraphrasing, "I want additional war military craft for the war we're facing." And he wants the Leopard 2 tanks, about 300 of them, but they haven't decided on that yet. They're sitting on the fence as of now, the Western allies, despite sending more missiles and so on for air defence. How do you think that will go down with the troops on the front line?
Well, we were asking the troops today on the front line, you know, if they were watching Rammstein, what they were hoping for. And I think they were hoping for far more than what has been pledged or promised or held out as a possibility. They told us, one man told me, what we need is tanks, 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 and not just tanks. They need better aviation. And he showed me his old Soviet era AK-47 assault rifle. And he said, these weapons are getting old. We need proper ammunition. So they sort of across the board, they need a lot of things. And when you speak to Ukrainian, whether it's officials or officers or soldiers in the trenches, they all say the same thing. They appreciate what's been provided by the friends of Ukraine so far, but they say it's just not enough to stop the Russians. And of course, the fear is that when spring approaches and the weather improves, that the Russians may well launch a massive offensive, not just here in the eastern part of the country. The Ukrainians are worried that they'll attack from Belarus as well. So there's plenty of concerns. And at the moment, it just appears that there's just not enough weaponry with the Ukrainians to stop them.
And what about the morale then? What about supplies as well? Can they get supplies in places like Bakhmut? And how is that affecting morale generally?
I must say, logistically, they seem to have really upped their game since the beginning of the war. They seem to be fairly well supplied. They don't complain about a lack of food, but they do often times tell you, especially artillery crews and mortar crews, that they have to ration their ammunition because they have a limited supply. So, I mean, as I said, I've seen a massive improvement in sort of the morale of Ukrainian troops, in their capabilities, in their equipment. So, by and large, for instance, we were outside Soledar, where the Russians took over the city, but Ukrainian positions were arrayed around Soledar, and they seemed to be holding their ground when we were there.
Mm-hmm. How does Soledar and Bakhmut compare with the likes of Bucha and Mariupol, which saw horrific atrocities? I mean, is it because there were multiple and indiscriminate killing of civilians in those places, as opposed to, is it mostly soldier versus soldier in Bakhmut so far?
Yeah, in Bakhmut and Soledar, it is soldier versus soldier, but there are civilians caught in the middle. In Bakhmut, there are still amazingly, I think, a couple thousand people still in the side of the city. You speak to them. We spoke to one woman today who told us that people are killed in Kyiv and Dnipro by Russian strikes, and if that is your fate, death will find you wherever you are. They have a very fatalistic view of things at this point. But, you know, when you mentioned Bucha, that was a situation where just the Russians went on a brutal rampage of murder of innocent civilians. It wasn't really a battle in that sense. Mm-hmm. And Mariupol was more of a case of, you know, they were in that one industrial plant, this last holdout of Ukrainian troops, completely surrounded and cut off.
A siege.
In the case of, and it was a siege. And Bakhmut is not yet a siege, but the fear is it may well soon be. In fact, one officer told me he expects in 2 or 3 weeks the city will be surrounded if things don't dramatically change.
Can I ask you briefly then, I know your experience in terms of reporting from various war scenes, can you compare them? How does this compare to other conflicts you've covered?
But this is a conflict on a scale of something I've never seen before. I mean, these are both of them very large armies using very heavy equipment and a lot of it. You know, I've covered endless wars in the Middle East, in Africa, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. And oftentimes there was a massive imbalance between the two sides. In this case, even though obviously the Russians have a numerical advantage, an advantage in weaponry, they're much more on a equal playing field than I've seen anywhere else. But in terms of the scale, this is nothing like I've ever seen before.
Okay, well, thank you very much indeed for your time. I really appreciate it. Ben Wiedemann, CNN senior international correspondent in near Bakhmut in eastern Ukraine. Thank you very much indeed.
Welcome.